Well, hi and welcome. This is Dave. How's everybody doing?
Good. Hello.
Great. It's great to have you. I would like to have, in just a moment, each of you introduce yourselves and give just a brief background of your experience and your journey to coaching and to this training. But let me say a couple of words first of introduction. I'm very pleased to be working with you, collaborating with you in this training series. We're going to have 12 seminars. Each will be 75 minutes. I'm going to supplement the curriculum, and it sounds like each of you have already received that from the Fulfillment House. You'll see at the page you were directed to when you signed up that there's an outline. It's a fairly annotated outline of what I'm going to present. I'm not going to reiterate what's in the curriculum, but sort of supplement that, explain how to use it, some coaching applications, additional material and research, and case studies. And there's also a syllabus of which part of the curriculum corresponds with each of the 12 seminars, so that if you're able to read ahead for that, I think it'll make it much more meaningful for you. I'd like to preserve some time at the beginning and the end, and at least 15 minutes, 20 minutes, at the beginning and a similar amount of time at the end to discuss whatever questions that you have, to do case studies. There is no coach the coach in this training. The only requirement is that you, for certification, that you complete a roadmap case study, and I'll send you an example of that, and we won't do our first ones until the second half of the training, so that you'll have some familiarity with the roadmap system. It's just writing up a case in a brief and simple way using the roadmap system, the seven steps. It can be on yourself or on a client, but we'll talk more about that, and I'll send you a sample. And I want to offer a couple of bonuses. I'm going to have my Fulfillment House at the end of the training mail you a hard copy of Live a New Life Story, the workbook. It's the workbook companion that is in gray in your curriculum so that you'll get an idea of what a separate workbook would look like if you want to use that with clients, because that's what you can co-brand, put your name on the cover, and have a new first page. I'm also going to send you a copy of Outsmart Your Brain, an instruction manual. It's a little bit lengthier ebook as soon as a revision is done that I'm having. And none of this you have to remember now. We'll have quarterly mentor groups for you and all the people who have done the training included as part of this. So I'd like to have each of you introduce yourselves and tell us a bit about yourself, and especially what you'd like to get out of our collaboration together. Anne Marie, would you begin?
I would love to. Thank you. My name is Anne Marie Silly.
May I ask you, Anne Marie, are you on a cell phone?
I am. I'm on a headset.
Okay. Is there any chance that you could get to a landline, or is this the best you can do?
I don't actually have a landline. However, I could probably improve the headset quality that I have.
That's okay. Go ahead, and if it's good for your hearing, then I can make out what you're saying, and I think our colleagues can too. So go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
Okay. If it doesn't work, just give me the heads up, and I'll try some other options. So as I mentioned, my name is Anne Marie Silly. I have been a practicing coach for a little over a year now with my own business. My specialization is in change. I've been through my fair share of unexpected and sometimes more often than not unwanted changes in the last few years, and I've translated that into a coaching business. To help some folks going through similar things, whether it be career, relationship, or overall wellness. One of the things that's been missing for me has been a more structured program, particularly for folks who are having a tough time letting go of the past. So I was in the process of creating my own program when I received the notification for the availability of this training, so the timing is perfect. Dave, I've taken your art and science of change and transition, so it's a lot of what inspired my specialization as well. So I'm really looking to get a not just to get a structured program that I can offer to my clients, but fluency and practice with that program so I can really hit the ground running when this is over. And, you know, and maybe even double back with a couple of folks that that are still seeking help, and maybe I didn't feel like I was in a good place at the time to offer that. So
most of your coaches, coaching is in the wellness area?
No, actually the bulk of it, over the last year, has been much more in the career area. More because of, as I have transitioned out of corporate because of a specific business divestiture, I have helped a lot of colleagues in their process. My vision is to coach in career, so major change, helping people with major change across the three vectors, career, relationship, and wellness. More than likely, 75% of what I will coach, though, will be more career and relationship. I think there's folks that may be a little bit more specialized in some of the wellness areas that folks are seeking, so I'm a little bit more careful about where I choose to help people and where I think I can help people versus where I'm not sure I can in wellness. Maybe this will help me expand a little bit in that world, though.
Terrific. Okay. Well, super. Thanks and welcome.
Thank you.
Has Emmy been able to join us?
I'm here.
Welcome. You sound next door, even though being in Munich, Germany. Welcome. How are you?
It's Skype.
Okay. Great.
Yeah. My name is Emmy, and I am I'm a lawyer, and I work in Europe, not as a lawyer. I work as I have a group called Munich Artists where I deal with lots and lots and lots of artists. And up to this point, we've been using, like, the artist way. But I don't like it. I like the artist way for myself personally, but I don't like it for Europeans because they're not so spiritual. So for me, this is like it's like pulling teeth. And they don't like the book. They dislike it. Yeah, I will find they seem kind of a little bit too esoteric. So for me, I was looking for something. I work as a writer and a strategist, and so for me, I just really liked the whole idea of the story. And so for me, I wanted to when I saw this, I was like, oh, this is perfect because it would it'd make more sense for them. And yeah, so that's why I wanted to see if it would fit in. And I'm a certified metabolic balance coach. It's a German company. But I live in Germany, and I'm certified for America, so I can't. I'm not allowed.
Certified in what specifically? Say that again.
In wellness coaching.
Okay.
So I'm a certified wellness coach, and I write for them on wellness. And but I don't coach on wellness here in Germany because you have to have a specific licensing here as a it's called a Heil practitioner. It's like a naturopath. So it's a special training here. It's about 3 years. It's a totally different type of system. So I just write and advise coaches, but I don't actually coach health coaching in Germany.
I see.
Yeah.
And what would you most like to get out of our collaboration together?
I love the whole idea of being able to have a more structured, less esoteric process that I can share with the artists that I'm dealing with. We have a group of about 500 artists, and they always come to me for things, and I would like to be able to offer them workshops and stuff like that that's more structured. But I thought this would work out really well for them, not having that.
That's terrific. One option is that I can go ahead and send. It sounds like it may be helpful for you to look at or have as part of what you're doing as we go through this, the actual client workbook to see how applicable it may be for you, for your group. And I can go ahead and send each of you that that client workbook as a, as an initial bonus rather than later, if that would be of help to you.
That would be great. I would appreciate that.
Okay. Okay. How long did it take the curriculum to get to you in Germany?
I don't have it yet, so I don't know.
Okay. Okay.
It's coming from America. It usually takes 2 to 3 weeks.
Even
though it's quite expensive to send it over.
Okay.
It's really not in
Indiana, so I'll check with them also and see about that. But I'll be sure that you get, and I'll just send this to each of you, the next couple of weeks as PDF so that you'll have the curriculum so you won't get behind.
Thanks. I appreciate
well,
that.
Well, super and welcome. That's great. Stephanie.
Hi, good afternoon and evening to everybody. My name is Stephanie Alba. I've been a practicing coach since 2010, and I was actually trained by Dr. Kruger, so I'm happy to be learning with him again.
Put a little pressure on me to change some of my stories.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. I coach one-on-one as well as group events. I also teach an annual Transform Your Life retreat in Pahoa, Hawaii, and smaller meditation and miracle retreats throughout the year. I also have an empowerment line of products that's launching at the end of this year, beginning of 2016, and that'll include my first book, manifestation products and tools that people can use, as well as like energy and spiritual healing items. I would say that my specialty has sort of manifested itself as transformation and healing, getting people out of their old ways of thinking and being and giving them the tools to heal themselves and then create a new path for themselves. I feel like what I've been missing in my work is I think consistent clients. I have a core group of clients, and I add them on throughout the year. I add more clients, and I teach group, you know, events and stuff, but I think I need more consistency with that, so I'm hoping to learn that. The other thing I'm hoping to gain from the training is, again, to gain a little bit more of a structured way to teach workshops for those who are less energy, spirit, you know, spiritual inclined. And just as well as just learning and implementing new tools to freshen up and add to my coaching style.
Okay, terrific. Well, I'm excited about our group. I think there are some real advantages in having a smaller group in the sense that we'll have more time to discuss cases, and if you have cases or vignettes or challenges, to bring them in so that we can all benefit from that. I'll have about 40 to 45 minutes in the middle as some discussion that I prepare. I'm sort of operating from the same outline that you are. I'd like to keep the line open, in other words, not go to lecture mode, so that if there's something that you'd like to talk about briefly or to clarify before we get to the end and have a more open discussion, feel free to do that. Just be sure that you're aware of managing the background noise, and especially for a cell phone or a computer access, that there's no background noise, because I'd really like to keep it open. So basically, the sort of the backstory here is that when people actually go through changes in coaching, to look at the specific steps they need to take in order to change. In other words, what are the basic elements of understanding someone's story, to listening to someone's story and understanding it, to deconstruct the elements of it, to look at how to help someone reconstruct a new story or a revised story. And this is basically the roadmap, the 7 steps for understanding and revising a story. We're going to spend the first basically 5 seminars on that, and then we'll look at applying that in subsequent seminars to money story, career story, relationship story, wellness story, a number of applications in that way. So you'll also see as part of the, as one of the downloads at the page you were directed to, a 28-week protocol. Now, that's something that I was nudged to do by a number of people who did the training with me, because I didn't want to reduce this to a format or a Procrustean bed, but people wanted a kind of guideline if they do like a group, for example. And I've done coaching groups with people who have trained with me who wanted to do the work themselves on their own stories. So I've done three groups now, and I've used the 28-week protocol and just had an assignment for each of the, we would meet 3 weeks of the month, and we had a fixed time, like 9 months, and there were certain assignments. So it works really well for working with groups. So just something to keep in mind. Now, there's also a glossary and some support material at the end. There's also a the first document in the support is the client information packet. It's the one that I use on my website and get clients to fill it out and send it to me prior to our first meeting. So, and I'll talk some more as we kind of go through this, and at the end about other aspects like being on the registry and that sort of thing. First of all, are there any questions about any of the housekeeping or about any of what we've talked about so far, just to clarify?
Dave, real quick.
Yes.
The 28-week protocol that you mentioned, is that something we will receive or have received?
It's a download at the same page that you downloaded the outline and the syllabus, and that will have the placement of the reports for the recordings of each of the 12 seminars. And the IT guy for CTA will put that up about within 24 hours of each of the seminars. So if they're all on that same page.
Okay. Okay. Yep, thank you.
Okay, absolutely. Other questions?
So the 28 weeks goes through the different sections, because I saw there was a wellness.
The 28-week protocol is just if you want to have work with a client or with a group, that each week they do a certain aspect of the workbook, a certain segment, the exercises and work tools. It has a specific segment designated for each week that can be a kind of a catalyst for their work in a more systematic way. And it's just something that you may find useful if you work, especially with a group, but also it may be helpful for some individuals. So it's just there in case you want to use it. Make sense? Does that make sense?
Okay, I'm now back online.
Okay.
I got kicked off. So maybe I shouldn't be asking questions.
Does that answer make sense, Anne-Marie?
Oh, I didn't hear. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear what Anne-Marie asked.
No, I think I think that was actually Emmy's question.
Oh, okay. Oh. Okay. Is that clear?
Yeah, I didn't hear it because I got kicked off. So I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'll listen to the recording.
Well, basically, the 28-week protocol is a specific assignment of work tools and exercises in the workbook that can correspond to each week of work for an individual client or a group, and be something that's a kind of catalyst for the work that you do with them if you feel that it might be helpful to go through it in a more systematic way. Okay?
All right.
Okay, well, as a prologue to our work. In the first session, I want to talk about the power of story and the concept of writing a new story. The remaining seminars, we'll look at how to do that, at the principles and practice of change, beginning with the 7-step roadmap process to create a new story. We're going to talk about your life story, your specific stories of wellness, money, career, relationship, I encourage you to do the exercises and work pages and the workbook. I want to encourage you to actively listen and understand your own story to apply the process. When you've done it yourself, you're in the best position to coach it. When you've made your own journey, you can best guide the client's journey. From a Chinese proverb, I hear and I forget, I see and I remember, I do and I understand. And from Columbia University, we remember 2% of what we hear, 25% of what we see, and 90% of what we do. So my suggestion, put it into action. Also suggest that you write this question down. What is my story? I'd suggest you schedule a brainstorming session with yourself to think about your story, your life story. It makes you who you are. Summarize your plot in one sentence. Bullet your major storylines. Not your bio, not your title, not your role, but your story. One of the things that you bring as a professional coach that's unique, you're each experts at change, choice architects. You facilitate and guide a client's life or wellness story. As we go through the seminars, think about your professional story. Work on how to convey your unique offering in a clear, brief, simple way that focuses on client benefits. At a meeting not too long ago, I heard David Plouffe, who was originally Obama's chief campaign strategist, said, be able to answer every crucial question in one sentence. And Einstein said, if you can't explain it simply, you don't understand it well enough. So here are some premises that our work together will be based on. One, and this is all in your outline. Plot is the structure, purpose, and pattern of a story. For a life story, it's the outline of life narratives. The core assumptions of life and of life stories inform what people look for and how they attribute meaning to what they experience. It's our blueprint of what we believe and how we believe life should be. Behavioral patterns and belief systems downloaded, especially from parents, in the early years of life become automatic to operate without observation or awareness. In fact, neuroscientists estimate that about 95% of our behaviors and core beliefs are pre-programmed in the unconscious mind and operate on autopilot. So if 90 to 95% of our operating systems are not conscious, that means we can, or our clients can, create two stories simultaneously. One, the surface story, the conscious story. We run our lives with conscious intentions and aspirations. And this is what we focus on. This is what I want from life. This is my goal, my plan. Yet the conscious mind is a tiny processor that controls the mind and brain system less than 10% of the time. Now, the shadow story, the unconscious story that can ghostwrite behavior, can at times go in a different direction than conscious intention. So when your life and actions don't meet your positive conscious aspirations, this can sound like, well, I just can't get what I want, or the system keeps me from doing what I need, or I don't have what it takes. Or if the surface story and the shadow story are going in opposite directions, then it can create a stuckness. I want to generate more income and create wealth. And then the shadow story is, I don't believe I have what it takes, or, you know, all that work, I think I'm just going to stick with the status quo. Two, we learn through stories. Stories are how we understand and how we remember. James Watson, the guy who discovered DNA with Crick, said, you know, I can remember something when I fit it into a story. A story is a system for holding together facts. It makes things make sense. Muriel Rukeyser said, the world is made up of stories, not atoms. We personify the economy or the stock market as if each were a story of its own. We make a story out of events in order to infer a relationship and assign causality. 3, we each have a personal story with a plot and storylines. Our beliefs and assumptions ghostwrite that story. From an infinite sea of possibilities, our software determines what we perceive and process. The brain needs a story. It will infer one, so it's helpful for us to know the lexicon. Our plot consists of our core beliefs and assumptions that transform all available information into our own system, that we make sense of the world through this system, this story. We then create life narratives according to that plot, since mind and brain are both programmed to process by the default mode and to ignore facts that contradict assumptions. 4, a life story contains silent assumptions and emotional scripts. Our assumptions even tell us what to look for and how to perceive and process experiences. Some of our beliefs and patterns may be invisible even to ourselves. An example, Gregory Maguire, a best-selling novelist and playwright, most recently the Broadway hit Wicked, said, "I didn't even realize this at first, but there's almost no central character in any of my 24 books who doesn't have a dead mother or a lost parent." Maguire's mother died from complications during his birth. After his 23rd book, he finally became conscious of the fact that, as he put it, "I can't seem to start a novel unless the character doesn't have a mother. If the mother's still alive, if she were still there, what's the problem? There's nothing to write about." 5, we believe and remember only that which fits our plot. What we expect to happen in the present reveals instantly our experience in the past. Psychoanalysts call this transference. For example, someone abandoned early in life will expect more of the same in future relationships, even though circumstances change. All subsequent information is absorbed, filtered, and organized by that narrative plot. To say that in a slightly different way in terms of coaching, what this means is that we have two things, a blueprint and life experiences. The blueprint is our set of expectations, our beliefs of how things should be, and life experiences. When our blueprint meets our expectations and they match, we're happy. If one or the other is off, then we're unhappy. So that means we're going to either have to change our blueprint, our set of expectations, or our experiences. And we'll return to that. Our expectations, in fact, determine what we see, but they also may blind us to other things that we were not looking for. An example, a professor who's fond of telling stories asks his class close to the end of the class if they have time for him to tell them a story before they leave. They look at their watches and inevitably say yes. He immediately asks them what time it is, and they have to look at their watches again. And this is completely understandable because their frame of reference for the initial checking was to see how much time remained, not what the time it was. The first time, they looked to see if there was enough time left before the class ended. If we look for one thing, we may miss another. 6, we don't see things as they are. We see things as we are. We see what we believe, and we always are right because we write the story. Let me give you an example. This is a true story a number of years ago out of Oxford. 2 anthropologists were chosen to enter separate, essentially identical ape colonies to live and observe for a year. The 2 anthropologists were selected because they had remarkable similarities of personality, philosophy, training, education. They entered the ape colonies, not communicating with each other, not knowing what each other was doing, lived for a year, and then emerged to compare notes. They expected remarkable similarities, yet they found essential discrepancies. 1 anthropologist, after a period of transition, was accepted by the ape colony. He was integrated, had a particular unity and a comfort with the apes, got a real sense of connection with them. The other anthropologist never got beyond the social periphery of his colony. He remained careful and vigilant, always seemed right on the cusp of a conflict, never achieved that harmony. The anthropologists could not understand the discrepant results. They and their teams puzzled for months until they finally found one difference. The anthropologist who was the uncomfortable, careful outsider carried a gun. Now, his gun never showed. He never used it. The apes never knew he had it. But he knew he had it. He knew if things got tough, he had an out. The anthropologist who had no gun had a commitment. He knew from the beginning that he would either make it or not on his own. In retrospect and reconstruction, each of their assumptions created the reality that they experienced. We tell our story, then our story tells us. 7. A story can actually define possibility. In centuries of recorded time, no one ran the mile in under 4 minutes. It was impossible. Dr. Roger Bannister broke the 4-minute mile in 1954. Within the following 18 months, a dozen other runners broke the 4-minute mile as well. The obstacle of the impossible could no longer be constructed. Today, this is commonplace. When the mindset of what's possible changes, reality then changes as well. 8. A story can define reality. A placebo generates the effect of the accompanying story. A patient is prescribed an inert pill plus some expectations, in other words, a story. In the vast majority of cases, the story becomes the reality. By anticipating an experience, someone creates it. The story even generates a truth so powerful that it reverses the pharmacological effect of a real medicine. The placebo is a white lie. It's a fiction that becomes a truth. And a recent MIT study showed that a more expensive placebo, when someone knows the cost of it, worked significantly better than a much cheaper one. Same placebo, different stories. Now, this isn't about being gullible or suggestible. For example, when a patient believes something will reduce pain, the body releases endorphins. This is the body's story as well. Medical research, in fact, shows that over 70% of successful non-surgical treatments are the result of the patient's belief that the treatment will work. Now, of course, this is predicated on the physician's belief that the treatment will work. 9. A story can take over the author. Listen to these expressions. My anger took over. My fear stopped me. A feeling that someone creates is then perceived to act on the person who just created it. Here are some ways that we can see ourselves as the victims of the stories that we create rather than the author. My doubt paralyzed me. My work eroded my free time. My weight gets in the way. We ascribe a story with a mind of its own to our own creations. In other words, a feeling or an experience that we create, we then see this experience as though what we created is acting on us and making us its victim. We become the victim of the feeling we just created. So that's why I have an agreement. Or one of the reasons I have an agreement with every client I work with, I request that I be able to interrupt that client at any point that I'd like us to focus together on something that they just said, because it may be more poignant at that instant rather than waiting until they finish two or three paragraphs later. And I want to give them that permission with me to interrupt me at some point, because if there's something that I just said that's unclear, then that leaves some of the energy back there at that juncture and not fully immersed in the present moment. Now, another example of the power of story in this regard is a woman I know who recalled an incident from her adolescence. She attended many, many years ago a Catholic all-girls boarding school. She said, "At one party, I started a rumor that the punch was spiked and everybody got drunk." 10. Your life is the self-statement, the manifestation of what exists inside you. What people say and do are inevitable, unavoidable self-statements of their beliefs and personal realities. All that you say is about yourself. What you say about me tells me about you. Everyone is always making self-statements. I'd suggest when you get the curriculum, one of the last couple of tabs is the glossary, and it's a collection of terms that I use to kind of amplify your awareness of it. It's also kind of an excuse for me to put a couple of my favorite quotes by each of these. One of the terms back there, in their alphabetical order, is self-statement. So when you have a chance, look at that and get a little bit better feel of exactly what I mean by self-statement. In other words, you define yourself. Other people's definitions of you are more about them, to make themselves feel better of what they want or don't want to own, what they want to disavow or project. And you can never hit your own stride if you're running somebody else's race. Now, the practical aspect here in terms of coaching, and this is so crucial, and we'll return to it, the client is always showing you exactly what it's like to be him or her. They're doing their job description. In other words, the CEO who has been referred to you because they're annoying everyone in the executive suite begins working with you, and guess what? That person begins annoying you because that's their attachment pattern. That's their behavior style. So what you want to do is to develop the kind of working alliance so that you can be able to say what you want to say. In fact, look at my last blog that just came out this morning. It's at mentorpath.com/blog, or just from the homepage, click on the blog tab, and it's the first blog that's there. It's called Saying Everything We Need to Say, or Saying Everything You Need to Say, and it's about this point exactly. So I think it's helpful to look at it that way, that the client is doing the very best job possible of showing you what it's like to be him or her, so that you don't see it as resistance necessarily or somebody trying to defeat you or get the best of you. They're just doing their job to show you what it's like to be them so that you can help them to look at it in different ways. 11. When you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. Neuroscience shows that pure facts are a myth. Quantum physics seconds the motion. This observation came originally from quantum physics and the process of observing quarks. 12. An authentic belief in someone activates their brain to create a state of mind that transcends usual thinking and performance. This is so crucially important for us as coaches. I want to say that again. When we actually believe in our client, it activates a part of their brain to create a state of mind that transcends their usual thinking and performance. This is why I think it's so important that we believe in our clients. And I only work with people in whom I believe because I know that makes a difference. And I know that client will teach us both why. Now, this principle, the 12th principle that I've just said twice, comes from neuroscience, even though good parents have known it for centuries. And we'll talk about how that works and how to work it as well. Now, I suspect with these 12 principles that some of you may have some questions. And that's my hope, because when questions are raised, your minds and brains will work on solutions, will strive for closure. Now, one closure is to attach familiar associations and put it in a familiar container, the old story. Another is to keep it open, to remain in curious exploration of new meanings and possibilities, which is to say a new story. And that's what we hope with our clients. And each of these points that I've raised are themes that we're going to return to and develop and weave together through this experience. So I want to offer a very simple question. Why do we resist change? Even changing a story that doesn't work. And you've each known this from people you know, from working with clients, even ourselves. What keeps people from doing what they know they need to do for themselves? Why will someone repeat behavior that doesn't work, often do it harder, and expect a different result, even if it leads to lower energy or debt or plateaued career or disappointing relationships? Nassim Taleb asks in his book, The Black Swan, what are our minds made for? It looks like we have the wrong user's manual. Now, part of the answer to this question, why do we resist change, is in our minds. We repeat the same story because it's our comfort zone. It's secure, it's predictable. A comfort zone may be limiting or uncomfortable, but it's familiar, it's our default model. We repeat because we know how it's going to turn out, and that creates the illusion of effectiveness. A new story generates uncertainty and trepidation. The easiest and fastest way to end this discomfort is to go back to the familiar, the old story. People fail to change because they don't feel safe changing. Changing means leaving their home base of reality, of how they see themselves to be, their identity, the internal map, in other words, that is synonymous with their identity. And then we return to our default mode. Let's do a brief exercise. If you can get both of your hands free, put your palms together firmly and interlock your thumb and fingers. Now, with securely interlocked thumb and fingers, notice which thumb is on top. Now, keep your fingers exactly the same, firmly interlocked, but change so that you reverse your thumbs. The other thumb is on top. Now, how does that feel? Kind of awkward. Now, move your thumb back to the original. Kind of a relief. That's why people don't change. They return to their comfort zone. Now, up the ante, add significant success or significant stress, such as a major transition, really out of the comfort zone. We're going to talk more about comfort zones and how to program change. There is always the pull of the old and the fear of the new. And the reason I'm emphasizing this is that so many of the methods we use to facilitate change are contrary to how the mind and the brain work. Now, another part of the answer to why change is difficult is in our brains. The hypnotherapist Milton Erickson told of a story from his childhood in which whenever it snowed, he would be the first to get up and go to school so that he could create a fresh path in the snow. He intentionally created a really circuitous path, zigzags and indirect turns. He noticed that each person who followed him followed the same path. Until the end of the day, the path was really well worn, despite it being a very circuitous route. No one started a new, more direct route. And when he did this subsequently, no matter how many turns and twists, and he got more diabolical with this, each person in turn followed the path of least resistance. Not a single person created a new, more direct route. This is how neural pathways are laid down in the brain, by early experiences, then repeated until they're etched more deeply, even if they don't work as well, even if they're really circuitous routes. So, to think creatively, new neural pathways need to be developed outside the cycle of usual experience. Stimulation for new insight is a circumstance where the brain can't predict what will happen next. The catalyst for insight is a novel stimulus, new information, or new context. That's what we're experts at. We're going to talk about this juncture in particular, when your mind and brain both react to leaving the familiar and engage new behavior. The newness, the uncertainty, can be read, for example, as evidence not to proceed or intuition of a wrong choice, because this newness, this uncertainty, creates anxiety, a trepidation, because this is like leaving the superhighway of the familiar in your brain, these well-grooved familiar paths, to suddenly leave that superhighway, even though it may not be going where you want it to go, or there may be a limitation, it sure is easy travel to keep doing what you're familiar with. To then leave that and take a machete and start making your own trail, it's uncomfortable, it's work. So this discomfort can be read as evidence not to proceed. It can be read as anxiety equals danger, better head for cover, or simply, this is uncomfortable, my gut, my intuition is telling me this is not right. Now, all of those are misreads, because as coaches, we need to be able to help a client frame a new experience in a context that makes it familiar and furthers the process. If we can simply explain, I understand the discomfort of doing something new and giving up what's been familiar and a default mode for so long. In other words, to reframe it as validation of moving ahead, a signpost of progress, because this is what helps someone incorporate this as a new model. This is the P of the roadmap, program new identity, because the most common reason that people don't make change permanent and revert back to their behavior is they don't change their identity. They may create a behavior change, but then soon enough they'll revert back to their identity, because that's the home base of the familiar. So we need to help them update their software, revise the model of how and who they see themselves to be, to incorporate this reframing as part of the work of the behavior that they're engaging that's in a different way. So not only do we actively construct stories, but our brain continually edits at the same time. Now, discomfort and uncertainty begin any significant journey. Our brains even have an error detection mechanism. It's located very close to the emotional center, that when we do something different, when we leave our comfort zone, it says, this isn't normal, when we try something new. Now, we're going to talk about how to use this mechanism as part of an internal navigation system that can be very powerful. Now, an example is a classic study, which I'm sure most of you have seen, in which an audience is asked to watch several people dribbling and passing a basketball among themselves. Their job, to count the number of passes each person makes during a one-minute period. Intense concentration is needed because the ball moves quickly. Then someone dressed in a gorilla suit crosses the floor, walks to the players, turns to the viewer, and thumps his chest in the middle of the screen, and then leaves. How many people saw such an obvious phenomenon? Researchers Daniel Simons and Christopher Shabris found that consistently just over 50% of people failed to notice the gorilla. They weren't even aware that it crossed the screen, came to the center of the screen, thumps its chest, and then moved on. This inattentional blindness is our brain at work trying to construct meaningful and consistent narratives from an inconsistent world. In other words, the things that don't fit our storyline get unconsciously edited or simply fail to register as relevant. So this is some of the things that we're listening for as we're listening to the client's story. Things that are blind spots or omissions or beliefs or assumptions that aren't working. So we listen also for the power of story. Our brains can rewire. New experiences practiced consistently form new neuronal pathways and new neural networks. And some remarkable new research shows both beliefs as well as repeating new experiences can alter gene expression. So when we're writing a new story and change our minds, we're changing our brains as well. Metaphors and narratives become active brain structures. Also from the Black Swan, ideas come and go, stories stay. So I want to apply this now with the concept of active choice, because this is exactly what we're doing each of our engagements with a client. I'm going to describe a study for you and have you guess the biggest change impact. Maybe one or two of you who have heard me tell this story before. Ben Fletcher at the University of Hertfordshire in the UK devised a study to get people to break their usual habits. Each day, the subjects would choose a different option from polls of contrasting behavior, like lively, quiet, introvert, extrovert, reactive, proactive, talk about sports, talk about business. And they would behave according to this choice, choosing one of the two from different random possibilities. So an introverted person might act for as an extrovert for an entire day. Additionally, twice weekly, they had to stretch to behave in a way that was outside their usual life pattern, eating or reading something they would never have done before twice a week. So, what do you think was the biggest change in this group? Any hunches or any guesses? Take a chance. Take a guess. Any wild guesses? No risk takers in this group? Well, the remarkable finding, remarkable to me, was that after 4 months, the subjects had lost an average of 11 pounds. 6 months later, they had all kept the weight off. Most had continued to lose weight. Now, this wasn't a diet, but it was a study focusing on change and its impact. So what happened? Well, the rationale, the experience was that requesting people to change routine behavior made them actually think about decisions rather than habitually engaging in a default mode without consideration. In coaching, we can call this story busting. When the participants processed decisions actively, they chose and they exercised that choice. This became a conscious decision that they extended to other choices, such as what to eat and what not to. Most even got to the point of having everything they do be in their full awareness as a choice, even every bite of food they took. It wasn't an automatic based on what they had chosen beforehand or what somebody served them. They began to ask, is this bite in my best interest? So they made an active choice with every bite. Now, as coaches, we are choice architects to help a client be aware of a choice right now, for this moment, in the story that he or she is writing, because it's not there until you create it. So once becoming aware of actively making choices, we can decide what's in our best interest, what furthers the story, and what doesn't. So if you want to understand something, try to change it. Now, I want to give you an example before we have a discussion of an executive mentor coaching that I did with a client to kind of apply a couple of these notions. A client I'll call Brian was working successfully at a new CEO position. 3 months earlier, he had advanced from COO, chief operating officer, at another corporation, and he was doing a great job in his first 100 days. And this had pretty much paralleled the work we were doing in coaching. One session, he departed from our discussion of success strategies to say that he had a fear that he would somehow sabotage his new achievements. He then said he regularly stopped at a convenience store to eat candy before he got home each day so that his wife wouldn't see him. I asked him how he decided to stop each time. He responded by calling it sneak eating and said that he hadn't told his wife. And I ask, what do you say to yourself the instant you decide to stop and eat? In other words, what's the conversation in your head the instant before you stop? Well, he wasn't sure. Well, I pressed him a bit. I wanted to know specifically the conversation he was having that led him to his conclusion to get candy. As he thought about it, he said, well, I prompted him because he wasn't quite sure what I was asking. I said, in other words, do you bargain with yourself to say, well, I'll do better next week, but I'm going to go ahead today? Or do you oppose your own authority and say, I'll just do whatever I want? Or do you feel some overwhelming urge that hijacks your best judgment? Or do you get scattered and the candy kind of orients you? And then he recognized, he said, well, every time I have a conversation with myself that goes, to hell with it, I'm going to eat whatever I want. Nobody's around to stop me. And he realized that the result was to abandon his own principles. He was otherwise very attuned to his wellness. I noted that in the story he was writing, he farmed out his authority to his wife as if she were the obstacle. He kept the other half, the desire, as if he were getting away with something. If she weren't seeing him, then he got away with it. He created the illusion that he triumphed, that he won because his wife didn't see him. We talked about his stress in being more an ultimate authority now than ever before in his life, his first CEO position. And he acknowledged his choice in this one area to not be his own authority. So his question was, well, how do I get it back? And I said, well, I think the question is more, how do you not give it away? It's yours. You're the author of your own story. And then I added, it doesn't sound like you're being loyal to yourself. He recognized that he was writing a storyline that he actually detested. So I asked him how to convert this into an intention that was in his best interest. And he admitted he needed to take care of himself, that he wasn't living up to his own ideals, so he moved it to an internal point of reference to look at his needs and his ideals. We're going to talk about that more next seminar. He could then collaborate with me to make a specific plan with effective strategies to live out those needs and ideals, and especially as applied to eating and exercise. And we then applied this same process to expanding his success in his company as well as in his life. So basically what we did was move the point of reference to an internal one and align what he was doing, his strategy and behavior, with his needs and ideals. So just in summary now, here are some principles for us to look at and take going forward to facilitate change. This is a preface of living a new life story. One, each person's life story is created. In adulthood, you create each moment what you think and feel and experience. It's not there until you create it. Every day is a blank page, even though it may seem like that's just the way things are, or that there's a default mode that's easy to recreate what you created in the past. Two, knowing what not to do is at least as important as knowing what to do. Now, you may not always know what the next right thing is, but you can almost always know what it isn't. Three, when people create their own answers, they've signed on to invest in the outcome. This establishes the beginning of a sense of effectiveness and mastery, of asking at the beginning of each session, what would you like us to focus on during the session, and what would you like to take away from our discussion? The antithesis is somebody tells you what to do, or somebody gives you answers, or you hear a problem presented and look for solutions. Four, we don't see things as they are. We see things as we are. Our assumptions manifest as feelings and behaviors. When we make assumptions explicit, we can more clearly see which ones work and which ones don't, which ones facilitate and which ones interfere. And in coaching, the very simplest way to state that is we help, if something's working, you want to do more of it. If it's not working, you want to do something different. It's always not that easy in practice, but it's, in theory, it's ultimately simple. 5, change is constant and inevitable. It's the resistance to change that generates most problems. Think about that. 6, small changes lead to big changes. This is so simple, it's almost elusive. Issues that seem overwhelmingly large and insurmountable can be approached by looking at the simplicity of the issue in order to specify progress. For example, if you feel overwhelmed by the amount of tasks, first clarify one issue that if done today would be progress to get traction, ideally the next hour. This focus on a specific action exercises effectiveness and initiates a model of mastery. 7, problems, causes, and solutions are not always related or even interconnected. To resolve a problem, even emotionally to come to the end of the past, does not create a blueprint for success. That's why there are a lot of frustrated therapy refugees. Strategic plans for specific goals are necessary. If something is a totally new experience, you may need a guide, even for something like a healthier diet or exercise. 8, the benefit of doing more of what's working and less of what isn't will become evident and self-perpetuating. In other words, you need to know where you're going. When you create a map, it allows you to decide and discern where you are, where you're going, to measure progress along the way, and to tell what's detour and what's distraction. The end should be in mind from the beginning. Lewis Carroll said it well, because if you don't know where you're going, any map will do. Alice came to a fork in the road. "Which road do I take?" she asked. "Where do you want to go?" responded the Cheshire Cat. "I don't know," Alice answered. Then said the cat, "It doesn't matter." 10, you need the correct paradigm. A paradigm is an internal map, the way you see, interpret, and understanding something. It needs to be the correct one. We often don't emphasize this enough in coaching, I think. If you're in Dallas and need to navigate the city, a map of Houston is useless, no matter how hard you try. And it needs to be current, not a paradigm from an old story. 11, decide what you want. Believe it's possible. A belief is a filter between reality and our perception. Just like the filter on a camera alters the image that gets recorded by the camera. As I mentioned, we now know that beliefs can turn genes on or turn them off. You can change your life by changing your beliefs. And our possibilities are only limited to the ones we allow ourselves to see. Here's one belief coupled with a goal as an example. A destitute young housewife had almost no money. She can't afford a babysitter or a computer, but she has a story to tell, and she's determined to do it. She decides to write. As soon as she starts writing, her mother dies at age 45 from multiple sclerosis. Her marriage to an abusive husband ends in divorce. She has a miscarriage. She gets fired from her job and lives on government welfare. How many things can go wrong? She takes her baby to a coffee shop in the middle of the afternoon and writes on a legal pad while her baby takes a nap. She does this every day for 4 years. And then after much work, she finally found a publisher for Harry Potter. Now, I'm interested in your thoughts, reflections, or questions and clarification. How does this sound to you?
This is Stephanie. This is really a lot of what I teach, of what I've learned over the last 6 or 7 years in changing my own life and my own belief system and my own structures. So I apply this every single day. I am a firm believer in it. I've seen it work in my own life. And, again, I teach it to other people.
Okay. All right, great. So this fits with what you are knowing. This just is an evolution of what you already have been experiencing.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Okay. Okay, other thoughts or other questions about any of this?
Dave, it's Amory.
So
there's a lot here, and my brain is swirling, right? I'm absorbing it, and I'm taking it all in. And I guess I think my question would be, over this next week, what advice or what suggestions would you have to really, you know, internalize this information in a way that either, you know, we find the metaphors and the narratives out there for some of these principles, or, you know, we apply some of these things. So, again, I'm in that rapid absorption mode.
Yeah.
But I don't want that. I don't want the moment to pass where, you know, I can actively apply it or bring it to life.
Okay, that's a great question. So, if your system is perturbated and you are in a confused state right now, then my job for today is done. No, so what I would suggest is twofold. One is to schedule a brainstorming session with yourself, even if it's only 10 or 15 minutes, and really write down your answer to what is my story. You know, again, not your plot, your role, your accomplishment, but what is your story? And secondly, to do the exercises and work pages that accompany the first and second week. The first week doesn't have any exercises or work pages, but you'll see in the corresponding segment of the curriculum the workbook portion that goes with next week's initial steps to recognize and own a story. So the best preparation that you can make for next time is to do those exercises and work pages that correspond with that for yourself, because
great,
you're going to then develop a way of listening to your own story that's going to better inform you listening to the elements in someone else's story. And again, those are the seven steps, the deconstructed elements of how to construct a story, but first how to listen to the story and understand the story that's already there, and then to look at what do you want to change, because
uh-huh,
everything that you're constructing, whatever you think, feel, experience, you're creating each moment, and it's not there until you create it, as we've just discussed. So that would be the best way of doing that. Now, that may not be easy because it involves self-reflection and self-examination, but I think it's the very best thing that we can do as coaches is to be fully aware of our own story. And we develop in the best way possible our own instrument. We don't have sterling steel instruments, but we use our own instrument, our own experience, the way that we listen, to interact and engage with someone and to help them develop the most informed way possible of listening to and creating their stories. So does that make sense to you, Anne-Marie?
It makes a ton of sense. What I'm wondering is, in that self-brainstorm, is there any additional guidance or structure or questions that a self-brainstorm for me, it scares the hell out of me, not from the standpoint of doing it, but I could see where I could do that for hours and hours. So as I do it for myself and I would want to do it with a client, making sure that I have an end in mind
I definitely will not offer any more guidelines then, because I don't want to limit what you do, but I would say one guideline would be to do it within a circumscribed period of time, maybe 15 minutes, maybe 30 minutes, but to really reflect on what your story is, not the story you want to project, the story that you want people to believe, but what is your story?
Okay. I think that's one of the, that is an amazingly powerful question. I've gone through a job search recently, for example, and that's one of the questions. That's one of the questions that they often ask at the beginning of the interviews is, you know, tell me your story, tell me your journey. And I don't know where to start sometimes. So I think this is going to be one of the most insightful and enlightening exercises of this entire class for me.
And that's specifically why I don't want to delimit it anymore or give you any examples until you each do it yourselves.
Okay, great.
And I think you really captured the essence of the intent there, just to really reflect on exactly what you're about, what's your story, because it's probably the thing that we least and last examine is our own story, because it's so subjective, it's elusive in that way, and this is about, among other things, developing a more objective awareness and at the same time a more subjective awareness of ourselves. Because that will be the very best preparation for working with our clients.
I can see it already as this being a powerful precursor to possibly somebody that knows they're going to be going into the job market, for example.
I think you've already started.
It
begins long before it starts.
Thank you.
This is Stephanie. Is it okay if I offer a quick, like, I call it training wheels for the helping of the answering of the question, what do I think or what do I believe? One of the things that I look at when I'm sitting down to do a brainstorming thing like that, or when I'm teaching it to another person, is if I find it overwhelming to try to decipher, you know, what is it that I believe? Like, what am I about? What's my story? I tell people to take a look at their surroundings, because what we believe, what our story is, has a tendency to show up in our lives everywhere. So if there's a mess everywhere, then you can look at that. If it's very clean and tidy, you can look at that. If there's lots of broken relationships, you can look at that. If there's money issues, you can look at that. There's evidence of what your story is tangibly all around you. So if you want to start in a small area, like a small thing, just like open your eyes. Okay, let me take a look at my surroundings. What are my surroundings telling me about what my story is? It can be a little easier to start the story.
Okay. Thanks for that.
Thank you to both.
You bet. We've got about another minute. Any other thoughts or questions or reflections about anything you've heard or what you're thinking about in terms of the training, the impact so far?
I can offer up a potential impact.
Okay.
You know, I mentioned earlier that my specialization in coaching is change, and I know that's a very broad space, and I've been wrestling a little bit with the breadth of that space. One of the things that this is helping me with is potentially really narrowing in to people who have already experienced a major change. So maybe not so much about the people who are in preparation mode or trying to proactively make a change, but really helping with people who have already faced a traumatic change. For example, I like what you said with strategic plans for specific goals are necessary. So this is helping me think about my target a little bit more and how to help that target with the most impact, if that makes
sense. Okay, great. Thanks.
Rather than trying to be everything for everyone, really narrowing in to people and finding those people who gather based on these traumatic changes that they have gone through, like job loss, for example.
Okay, super. Well, we're off and running. Thank you very much for all of your energy and input, and I really look forward to our collaboration. We'll pick up right here next time. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Have a great rest of the week.
Thanks, you too.
See you guys.
Bye-bye.